Welcome to the Teaming Against Trauma podcast, brought to you by Dorchester Children's Advocacy Center. My name's Brooke Anderson, and I'm so grateful that you're here with us. We'll be talking about the way child advocacy professionals come together to fight against trauma and the effects that it has on children. From these conversations, my hope is that you'll gain a better understanding of the way the Child Advocacy Center model works and leave feeling inspired with action steps that you can use to better understand trauma and prevent child abuse. This work truly takes a team to do. So now, I'm considering you a part of ours. Welcome to the team. Now let's fight together. If you've been following along, you know that this summer we did a Summer of Survivors mini-series where we got to hear from three courageous individuals share about their stories and the way that they have found hope, healing, and empowerment in the midst of experiencing childhood trauma. So many amazing things came out of this mini-series with new ideas and suggestions about how we're going to move forward this year. One of these things is talking about trauma therapy. You could call it trauma-informed therapy, trauma-focused therapy, trauma therapy. Honestly, we've went back and forth about what to even call this episode. But in general, we're going to be talking about the way that trauma affects how we do therapy here at DCAC. Rob and Melissa are two supervisors of the clinical department at DCAC, and they have a lot of insight into trauma and the trauma-focused models of therapy that we use that are the gold standard practices in the trauma field. So this is just one idea that has come from the Summer of Survivors miniseries because we were hearing that survivors were talking about their experiences with therapy. Before they disclosed or addressed their childhood trauma, their experience with therapy was different. But afterwards, once they addressed their trauma and were receiving trauma-informed therapy based around the needs that they had with their experiences of trauma, the outcomes were very different, and they were able to identify ways to cope and heal with the trauma and move forward with their lives. So we're going to just say right off the bat that this conversation has a lot of depth that we could go into. And because we're going to keep these episodes shorter, we're not going to have the time to really dive into it as much as it requires. So we want to encourage you to lean in to this conversation, but know that it's merely scratching the surface of trauma and trauma-informed therapy. If you have more questions, please feel free to call us or contact us via email or through our website. All of this information will be in the show notes, so you can visit it there. Now, without further ado, let's jump in to my conversation with Rob and Melissa. Hi, Melissa. Hi, Rob. Welcome to the show today. I'm so glad that you're here. Melissa, can we start with you? Can you tell us who you are, what you do at DCAC, and something fun about you?
I am the Director of Clinical Services. So as part of my role, I oversee both our forensic and our clinical department and do forensic interviews and therapy. I'm also part of the Tri-County Human Trafficking Task Force as a co-chair for the Child Directed Services Subcommittee. A fun fact about me is that I am also a yoga teacher.
That's great. Rob, what about you? I know you're our first second timer on the podcast to interview, so we heard some about you before, but what else do you have to add?
Yes, I'm so glad to be here. I am the Assistant Director of Clinical Services, so Millicent is my direct supervisor, and just like her, I supervise our forensic interviewers and therapists here at the center. We were talking about this a little bit earlier. I, right now, am on Duolingo, learning Danish, because that is where my family originally from, Denmark.
Cool. That's awesome. Have you ever been to Denmark?
No, I have not. Not yet.
Dang, you gotta learn the language and then go.
Exactly. That's what I'm hoping for. Okay. That way I can speak when I go there.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, I'm really excited to have you guys here on the podcast and to talk about trauma-informed therapy. And it's such an important part. I talked about it a little bit in the beginning, but from our Summer of Survivors series, we heard our survivors talk a lot about the therapy that they received and how once they were addressing their trauma and received trauma-informed therapy, it was really helpful on their healing journeys. So could you start us off just by telling us, kind of defining like what trauma is from a clinical perspective?
Well, what trauma essentially is the emotional response to something hard that's happened. It can be a spectrum. So some people can go through something really benign to other people, but as long as they have that kind of intense emotional response to it, and then it has to stick around with them. So everyone might respond emotionally to a car accident they've been in or have a hesitancy driving after they've been into a car accident. But if that is still lasting months and years after that incident, that might be a post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay, that makes sense. So when we talk about trauma-informed therapy, which is the majority of what we use here at DCAC, what's the difference, I guess, between that and like non-trauma-informed therapy?
So trauma-informed therapy would just be taking into account that everyone has experienced some type of trauma in their life. So a trauma-informed therapist could be treating a multitude of different disorders like anxiety or depression or substance use or eating disorder. And that therapist would just be taking into account that the person in front of them has experienced some type of trauma in their life. What we're doing is more trauma-focused therapy. So we are skill building around the traumatic event that that child or that adult have experienced.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And so if it was like a non-trauma-informed or non-trauma-focused therapy, would it be like, how would that kind of their experience of that, what would the skill building like be around?
Well, I think it wouldn't change much about what the therapist was doing, but it's almost like, it reminds me of like hyper-focus or hyper-fixation. If you come to a therapist for depression and they ignore all the reasons that you might have that, all your history, and just try to focus on the symptoms, that's not going to be helpful for everyone. So taking everyone's background into consideration and what they might have been through, especially in a non-therapeutic setting. So schools were trying to train to be trauma-informed. That when a child comes into your classroom and you're teaching math, you still have to be mindful that everyone has their own experiences and is going through something. So that's what trauma-informed means.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So when you talk about trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, is that the main type of therapy that we do here?
TFCBT, or trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, is right now the gold standard of treatment for children who have experienced trauma and are looking to like improve their symptoms regarding that. And so that's why it is one of the main services that we provide to kids who are coming to our center.
Okay. So in relation to what we were talking about with our Summer of Survivors, if a child had not yet disclosed their trauma, how would we treat them here at DCAC?
So a lot of times we are asked to do a trauma screening, so an assessment of a child's trauma symptoms, which provides that child and that caregiver the opportunity for them to disclose any traumatic events that they may have experienced. And if we don't have a disclosure of a traumatic event, then we can't provide trauma-focused treatment. So if we have a parent and child who are not disclosing any traumatic events but are reporting symptoms, then typically we are going to refer them out to one of our community partners. And then they, you know, potentially from there would be working on skill building around whatever that child's symptoms are. Okay. So in our trauma-focused therapy, when we have a disclosure of a traumatic event, then we would be talking about the trauma and skill building and doing a lot of gradual exposure work with the child and family.
Do you have anything to add to that, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's always a good reminder to people that the majority of kids who are victims of abuse do not tell right away. And so most of the kids we see are something we call delayed disclosure, where they've waited months or years to talk about something that's happened to them. But the majority who do come forward talk about trying to tell in different ways. So through their behavior and through their actions, or like hinting at these topics. So most of the parents that we see here where their kids haven't told are coming to us for some sort of behavioral issues. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that we can do is ask the kids if they've been through any of these situations. And if they say no, they haven't, then that puts us at a kind of a disadvantage, because we can't do trauma treatment if they are not telling us that they've been through a trauma.
Right. That makes sense. And what with like, so the majority, you said, of the cases that we see at DCAC are more some like delayed disclosures. Why is that?
So children delay disclosure for lots of reasons. A lot of them delay disclosure because they are afraid of what happens once they tell. They are worried about where they're going to go, where their family's going to be. Sometimes they don't want the offender to get in trouble or face punishment or consequences for what's happened. There's a lot of shame and secrecy when it comes to abuse, especially child sexual abuse. What else, Rob?
I mean, there, like you said, there are just so many reasons. Sometimes if the abuse happens, children are very present focused. So if it was a one-time event, once it's over, children don't feel the need to tell because it's not going to happen again. And if they're already worried about what's going to happen, or someone told them to keep it a secret, they're going to do that because I think it's status quo.
Can there be benefits to delayed disclosure?
On whose perspective, right?
Yeah.
I think with most mental health issues and physical health issues, the sooner people get into treatment, the better. That's less time that they're living with the shame, the guilt, the kind of the other issues that they're having to face because of their own victimization. Mm-hmm. But humans practice avoidance for a reason. They get a lot of benefits out of pretending something didn't happen. It's sometimes easier than having to face your fears. Mm-hmm. And that's why kids don't tell.
And when we use TFCBT, that's the model to use for when it's like a little bit more delayed disclosure. And there's a different model, right? If it's like more of a crisis intervention.
Well, I think that question is coming from something we discussed earlier, which was that if you do a trauma-focused therapy too soon after a traumatic event happens, it's shown to sometimes worsen the symptoms. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, some of that research comes after Hurricane Katrina. A bunch of therapists went down and did trauma-focused therapy right after the storm, because they knew that a lot of the kids would have PTSD from how bad that storm was. Mm-hmm. And what they found is that they were making the kids' symptoms worse because those kids needed to recover naturally first. And a lot of those kids would not have developed PTSD. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have symptoms for a substantial amount of time before calling it officially PTSD.
Okay.
Otherwise, the definition is acute stress disorder, something like that, and then it would graduate to PTSD if they still had those symptoms afterwards.
And TFCBT is for PTSD.
Yes,
children with PTSD.
It's only evidence based for 3 to 17.
Okay, Melissa, do you want to tell us some more about TFCBT? Like, what's the time frame? What's the goal, kind of that treatment?
So for TFCBT, the goal of treatment is to be able to reduce the child's overall trauma symptoms, to improve their quality of life and enhance their attachment to their caregiver. When we take a look at time frame, we have like simple trauma and complex trauma. So for our cases who maybe is a singular incident of a traumatic event, that treatment is typically 12 to 16 weeks. And for complex trauma, which can be one typology of abuse or neglect, but occurs chronically, or it could be multiple typologies of abuse over a span of time, would be our complex cases. And those for TFCBT, that time frame expands to 24 to 30. And providing TFCBT, we are providing psychoeducation to both the child and the caregiver that's participating. We help work with that caregiver on parenting skills for that child specifically and establishing new rules or boundaries within the home. We work on relaxation skills, effective expression, so being able to talk about their feelings that they are experiencing because of the traumatic event. We work on some cognitive coping skills. They are working through like the telling of their experience and then working on sharing that with that caregiver. Before we finish treatment, we want to work on some enhancing safety skills, which can look different for each child depending on their age, kind of what they have access to. So sometimes we're including, you know, some internet healthy decision making around being online or healthy decision making in sexual situations and things like that.
And why is the caregiver piece such an important part of TFCBT?
So we know from research that children will have a better outcome if they have a supportive caregiver. And so we want to be able to include that caregiver into the session so that outside of session, they have someone reminding them and helping them practice the skills that we teach them in session.
What if what if the child is in DSS custody? Who is the caregiver then that's like coming to do that?
No, that's a great question. It can be lots of different people.
Okay.
So a lot of times it's their foster parent.
Okay.
And, you know, as long as that caregiver, as long as they have one person in their lives, it doesn't have to be a caregiver, one person who is believing and supportive and patient with how they're handling their emotions, that's one of the biggest predictors of success in TFCBT. Mm-hmm. We've seen for some of the kids who aren't in foster care, who are in a group home, sometimes their HSP brings them, sometimes their DSS worker brings them to treatment. I think that that makes it a little bit more difficult with someone who doesn't see them every day, but usually the child is still getting that information and that support from therapy.
Yeah, makes sense. So when we talked about like screening some for trauma and if they're going to be seen by a therapist at our center, how do we though determine more? Like, is it just based on the screening that they take, the trauma screening, or how is it ultimately determined that a child should receive CFCBT treatment or not?
Well, the trauma screening that we've talked about is only part of their assessment, right? It's the trauma screening is meeting with the family for less than an hour usually, and that's just to get an idea of where the client's current functioning is. With trauma, it can be really hard because one of the biggest symptoms of trauma is avoidance. So even if you know a child has been through a trauma, you might ask them how they're feeling and they might say, I'm totally fine, I don't want to talk about this. And that can be because they are truly doing okay, or it can be because they just don't want to talk about it. And so we have to take into our assessment the context of all the information we're getting.
Okay. I'd love to hear from both of you on this, just your experience that you could share of like the positives that you've seen clients' outcomes with when you're using TFCBT.
I think for being able to see clients who, like Rob said, avoidance is huge, especially with children and wanting to talk about their trauma, and seeing them be able to talk about what's happened to them with minimal like emotional reaction over time is a huge success for them. I had a client who made minimal eye contact, kept their head down for most of the sessions, but to kind of see this progression over time to being able to make eye contact, to talk about what their experiences have been, and then be able to share that with their caregiver was huge for this client, and seeing that change, that positive change in them over the course of treatment, and being able to just interact even more open and talking about things going on in their life outside of session.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I think that trauma therapy is one of the most effective therapies, because if someone has depression or anxiety, that might be something that they deal with their whole lives. Whereas trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy shows success sometimes in as little as, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. And once a person has dealt with their trauma, the vast majority of the time their trauma symptoms never return like they were. And so as therapists, people ask us all the time, like, oh, how can you hear such difficult things? But we're able to see so much success from kids who get a lot out of therapy.
Yeah. And that brings up another point that I was thinking about with, because like obviously every child that comes in has a different experience and also different symptoms that they're experiencing at different levels, probably maybe based on what the event was, but also just based on them as a person responding differently. What, like when you're trying to reduce symptoms, that's probably going to look a little bit different for each child, I'm assuming. How do you judge like where that is? Because for one child, maybe, you know, if they came in and were experiencing that level, I guess, of symptoms, then they would be treated and it need to be lowered more. But some that may be like the graduating, I guess you could say, level that they would be at.
So I think when it comes for time to determine like whether or not a child is like graduating from therapy and completing TFCBT, we are looking and we're redoing those same measurements that we did at the beginning, the same assessments. We do them in the middle of treatment and then we do them again at the end. But we're also looking at the conversations that we're having with that child, the conversations we're having with that caregiver about what those reports are for behavior within the home or behavior within school. Going back to, you know, the more thorough assessment that we do with the family prior to starting treatment and kind of checking in about where that child is on the where their concerns were at the beginning and where that child is now.
Okay.
So, you know, for a child who has very high trauma symptoms at the start of treatment, you know, we're looking for an overall like 50% reduction in trauma symptoms, which might still be higher than average or higher than someone else. But for that child, they're showing a reduction in symptoms. That parent is, or that caregiver is reporting a reduction in concerns that they have as well.
And there are some kids who still need therapy when they're done with trauma treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So many of the children that we see here have multiple concerns that they have. Mm-hmm. The majority of the time, if a child is diagnosed with one thing, chances are they have a second issue going on. So sometimes if they're done with trauma treatment, they still might need therapy for their anxiety or their depression or their ADHD. And so that's always comes down to person-to-person decisions.
Mm-hmm. And that would be something that we'd refer out for further.
Yes. Our specialization here is in trauma. And we try to stick to what our training is in this profession. Mm-hmm. So we'd want them to see someone who's specialized in anxiety or depression or whatever they were being referred out for.
Makes sense. So Rob, you said that TFCBT is the gold standard for trauma treatment. What do you mean by gold standard?
It just has so much research behind it. There have been so many TFCBT studies done that show that it successfully reduces trauma symptoms and sets kids up for success.
Okay.
And so because it is an evidence-based, research-based therapy, that's why we want to make sure that's what we're providing here.
Do you have anything else to add about TFCBT or any of the different therapies that we use at DCUC?
You know, another evidence-based trauma treatment that we offer here is cognitive processing therapy, CPT. And it is also another gold standard for trauma treatment. It is designed for late adolescence into adulthood. So when we have older teens coming in for trauma treatment, sometimes we offer them cognitive processing therapy treatment over TFCBT. And when we have adults we are working with, then we are providing them with CPT services.
You mentioned you're on the task force, Millicent, for sex trafficking. Is there any difference between working with that population?
Okay, so when we are looking at victims of sex trafficking or those who are victims of some online exploitation, when we're doing our trauma assessments, we are also seeing if TFCBT is the best fit for this client and their family, or we also offer risk reduction through family therapy. And that is an evidence-supported treatment. It's a trauma treatment that also can address some substance use, as well as improving more focus on family communication, family dynamics. Mm-hmm. That is a longer treatment. These cases are typically more complex. These youth have experienced other typologies of abuse and neglect prior to the trafficking, typically. Mm-hmm. And so treatment can take a little bit longer, and the flow of treatment looks a little bit different with this population.
Okay. So if someone's listening and they may think that their child's displaying trauma symptoms, or that they may need to receive some of this treatment or type of this treatment we've been talking about, where could they reach out to get help?
So Shermaya Evans is our treatment coordinator, and she is typically the first point of contact when families are interested in treatment services. She typically gets, like, you know, some brief information about current concerns, current statements that the child may have made regarding any abuse or neglect. And then she staffs it with our clinical team, and we look at availability or scheduling for trauma screenings and things like that. Or based on kind of information she's getting, she will help connect that family to services within their community.
Okay.
And another good thing is that TFCBT is a nationally recognized model. And so multiple people in our area and all over the nation are trained in trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. And so there's a national registry of people who are trained in that. And I think anyone who trained it should be on their website, on their business page. And so if you're looking for a private therapist, then they should be able to let you know if they're trauma-trained as well.
Okay. Thank you so much, Rob and Melissa. I really appreciate all that you had to share with us, and I'm excited to get this out.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, Brooke.
Thanks for listening to our conversation. I hope you learned something new about trauma and trauma-informed therapy. Like I said in the beginning, remember that this conversation is merely scratching the surface of this really complex and deep topic. So I hope that you'll reach out to more resources that are available on our website, and also contact us if you have any further questions. Also, I want to remind you that this podcast is for you. So we want to know, what are you learning? And also, what suggestions do you have for future episode topics that we can talk on? Please reach out to me, and also leave a star rating and review so that other people can hear about what you're learning on the podcast. We're so grateful for you, and we want to make this the best that we can so that we together can keep fighting childhood trauma and the effects that it's having on children. So thank you for being on our team.